Morning. Today's Daf Nerchin is Dalet. We are in Gimel Amud Beis, and as we start the new Masechta, we're in the first parak of Erechin. So we haven't talked much about Erechin, which is understandable, being that the Gemara is on the following mission. We find throughout Shas the Mishnayos and the Braises, for that matter, also use the term Hakol, everybody. So when wanting to make the point that this is a broad halacha and it applies to many people, so it says the words Hakol. Now, even though literally Hakol means everybody, it does not mean everybody, cannot mean everybody. But it means, though, however, that the umbrella is larger than what we thought. More people are included than were originally, more than originally thought of. In that vein, so what the Gemara did in the first daf of the Masechta and in yesterday's daf as well, is to cover the gamut of all the Mishnayos and the Braises where we have the word Hakol, and what we look to do is see who is included, who is the person who is on the bubble, who you may have thought should not be included, but in fact is included. So that's been our discussion since the beginning of the Masechta yesterday. So we just changed gears just a little bit, and we moved on to another term that's used in a number of other places, and that's Kohanim Levim V'Yisraelim. Meaning, often is the time the Mishnah will say, you know who's obligating this mitzvah? Kohanim Levim V'Yisraelim. Now, it's another way of saying Jewish people. In other words, that's the composite of the Jewish people. They're made up of Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim. And so the obvious question would be, why would the Mishnayos and the Braises have to use that phrase, that expression? If you want to tell me that the Jewish people are chayv, so then just simply say the Jewish people are chayv. Why do you have to outline and articulate Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim? So, and this has been our discussion now since the midpoint of yesterday's daf. It starts really on the top of Gimel Amud Beis, and we are in the bottom of Gimel Amud Beis. And we're going to be continuing now. Hakol chayim b'tkiyas shofar. Everyone's obligated in tkiyas shofar. Kohanim levim v'Yisraelim. So on Rosh Hashanah, of course, there's one mitzvah of the day, and that is shofar. That's tkiyas shofar, meaning there's a lot of davening in that day. And the actual mitzvah sayom is shofar. And so the Mishnah tells us that everyone's obligated in the mitzvah of shofar, including kohanim levim v'Yisraelim. The question that now has been repeated numerous times, but now in the context of shofar, pshita isn't that obvious? Pshita isn't that obvious? Meaning again, it's a mitzvah incumbent upon all Jews, and it's a mitzvah says shasman grama. Women are not obligated in the mitzvah, but again, that's something which is obvious, and we knew that. And there's a minhag, there's a strong minhag, just to mention it, as long as we're here, a strong minhag for women to hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah, and the women go out of their way to go to shul in order to hear shofar on Rosh Hashanah. But in terms of ikar adin, according to who is obligated in the mitzvah, so it's men. So, but the Mishnah has to go out of its way to say Kohanim Levim v'Yisrael, and why would I have thought any differently? So the Gemara goes on to explain what the Havamina would have been. Kohanim Mitzrich Lei, well, the Kohanim is a Chiddush. Because Sa'akadat Chamina Hol V'Ksiv Yom Trua Yelachem. The Pasuk says that it is a day of Trua. And as Rashi points out over here, and the Gemara is going to be very clear, there's only one day in the year where there's a mitzvah to blow on shofar. So who is subject to the obligation of shofar? Somebody who is only commanded one day of the year to blow shofar. Kohanim v'ani kohanim hol v'isnu b'tkiya kulei shasa d'chsivu t'katim b'chatrasos alo seichem. So the Gemara now quotes from, I'm happy when I get to say this week's Parsha. So this week's Parsha is Baloscha. So there's a mitzvah we're going to be reading about in this week's Parsha that the Kohanim are going to be blowing on their chatzotzos over all their karbanos. Now karbanos are brought daily, which means that the Kohanim are going to be blowing on their shofar daily. Now, I confused terms a little bit, but I didn't confuse the terms, although I have been known to confuse things in the past. But I didn't confuse terms. The Gemara confused terms. Meaning, we're talking about the mitzvah of shofar, and then the Gemara transitioned into this week's parsha talking about the Kohanim Chatzotzos. And the Gemara wants to make the following point, which is, well, you see, I might have thought that the only one who has a mitzvah of shofar is only somebody who is obligated one day out of the year, which is the rest of us. But Kohanim, who are in the Beis HaMikdash and doing the Avodah, they're blowing on the Chatzotzos every day, so the Havamina would have been for them, they don't have a specific mitzvah to blow shofar on Rosh Hashanah. So Eima lo lechaivu. So the Gemara says, so that's the Havamina. The Havamina would have been that they're not going to be obligated. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second. Midami. Ha'asam chatzotzos hacha shofar. We're confusing. Meaning, yes, it's true, Kohanim do the Avodah, and yes, it's true, they blow, but what are they blowing on? They're not blowing on shofar, they're blowing on chatzosos. They're different. If you remember the Mishnah from Rosh Hashanah, Mishnah from Rosh Hashanah painted a picture of chatzosos and shofar being blown together, but they're different. And the shofar is specific to Rosh Hashanah, and chatzosos is specific to the avoda. So still, there's no havamina. I would not have thought that Kohanim are excluded from the mitzvah of shofar, meaning they too, just like us, the non-Kohanim, are only obligated to blow shofar one day out of the year. So where's the havamina? So the Gemara says, well, here's the havamina. Itzrich sakadat chamina hovetanan shaval yovel Rosh Hashanah litzkiel lebrachos. So the Gemara says, look, we have the following. We have a Yovel year. Now, we happen not to have a Yovel year, meaning in absence, in absentia of the Beis HaMikdash, we are no longer without the Yovel year. But as we all know, so you count 7 years, a 7 year cycle, that's a Shemitah cycle. You do that 7 times, that's 49 years. And then the 50th year is Yovel. And what happens in the Yovel year? A lot happens in the Yovel year. All lands return to their ancestral owner. All Eved Ivris are going to be freed. Right? Karatim Dror Baaretz. And so it's a year of emancipation. So there's something else that happens in the Yovel year, not as popular, so to say, but we're learning about it right now. And that is that in the Yovel year, so we are going to be blowing shofar in the Yovel year, specifically on Yom Kippur of the Yovel year, and also brachos as well. Now, brachos over here, Rashi explains that in the Yovel year, on Yom Kippur, so what we're going to be doing is that we're going to be davening, since we're blowing shofar, we're going to be davening a musaf with the same nusach as Rosh Hashanah. Meaning that what the Chachamim did is that they tailor-made a Shmoneh Esrei specifically for shofar. Now, of course, we're all familiar with it because on Rosh Hashanah, so we daven the musaf of Rosh Hashanah that's tailor-made for shofar. In fact, there are 3 sections in the middle of the Shmoneh Esrei of Rosh Hashanah, Machis Zechon HaShofros, which is specifically designed for Tkiyah Shofar. Since in the Yovel year, on Yom Kippur of the Yovel year, we're going to be blowing shofar, so we're also going to be davening the musaf as well, the special musaf of Machir Zichron HaShofras. It's always a long day in shul on Yom Kippur. Yom Kippur and Yovel, it's especially long. Anyway, what comes out is as follows. So you see over here that there is a connection between Yovel and shofar. Now, the Havamina will sound like this. Yisa ben mitzvahs Yovel, Yisa ben mitzvahs Rosh Hashanah. Leisa ben mitzvahs Yovel, Leisa ben mitzvahs Rosh Hashanah. And so now correlation. So anyone who is subject to Yovel is going to be subject to the mitzvah of shofar. Anyone who is not subject to Yovel is not subject to the mitzvah of shofar. And v'hani kohani hol v'lesnum b'mitzvahs the Yovel. Now kohanim are not subject to the mitzvah of Yovel, which I will explain better in just a moment. First we'll read. Didnan. Now we know this because the Mishnah says kohanim v'levim ochrim l'olam. Kohanim v'levim can sell their lands perpetually every year. And v'go'alim l'olam, and they can redeem it every year. So let's just, for right now, let's just simply say that Kohanim are not subject to the Yovel rules that you and I are subject to. And so therefore, Ema b'mitzvos Rosh Hashanah, nami lo lechayvo. So here now is the Havamina. Since Kohanim have certain exemptions when it comes to the Yovel year, and we see that there's a correlation between Yovel and Shofar, so therefore, since they're not subject to Yovel, they're not going to be subject to Rosh Hashanah, to the Tkiyas to Shofar as well. That's the Havamina. And to that now, we go all the way back to the beginning. And that's why the Mishnah has to say that who's chayv and shofar? Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim, because Kohanim is a chiddush. Now, the Gemara goes on to say that that's the Havamina. So, wait a second. So, it's a good Havamina, right? So, they are not subject to Yovel, so therefore they shouldn't be subject to shofar. And the Gemara goes on to explain. What the maskana is, Nehi, Delesnu, Bashmatas Karka, Bashmatas Ksafim, Bishiluah, Chavadim, Miya, Isnehu. Look, it's true that they are exempt from certain aspects of Yovel. But not from all aspects of Yovel. So let's say, for example, Kohen has an Eved Ivri. An Eved Ivri La'olam. In perpetuity, the Eved Ivri wants to work for the Kohen. But when we say perpetuity, we don't mean forever. We mean up until Yovel. So you mean to tell me that if a Kohen has an Eved Ivri, he's not going to go free? Of course he's going to go free. Now it's interesting, the Gemara also speaks about Hashmatas Ksafim, and that is release of loans. It's a curious statement of the Gemara, because Hashmatas Ksafim is not really tied to Yovel. Hashmatas Ksafim is tied to Shemitah, which happens every 7 years. Okay, so it's certainly a curiosity, certainly needs better explanation, but in the meantime, however, the point of the Gemara is actually pretty straightforward. The point of the Gemara is that yes, it's true, Kohanim are exempt from Yovel, but not from every aspect of Yovel, from certain aspects of Yovel. But they're not totally exempt from Yovel, and so therefore, since they're not totally exempt from Yovel, so therefore, they are connected to Yovel, they're connected to Shofar, they still have a mitzvah of Shofar. Okay. Now, I really ran right over the Gemara in terms of what exemptions do Kohanim have as it relates to Yovel. So we just learned, I mean, we're going to be spending more time on this at the end of the Masechta. It comes at the end. Kohanim v'Leviim mochrin la'olam. They're allowed to sell a land in perpetuity every single year and go'alam la'olam, and they can redeem it at any point in time. So I'm just going to say over Rashi quickly over here. You can see the Rashi's inside. I'm paraphrasing the Rashi's over here. So Rashi basically says like this. When it comes to the sale of land, so we could sell land, ancestral land, any year we want. Now again, it's not really a sale, right? We're going to, in the course of this Masechta, we're going to keep saying this idea over and over again. When you have ancestral land, stay achuza, so you're not selling it. You're leasing it because you know it's coming back to you in Yovel. Okay, so it's a lease. But anyway, so we're doing so any year of the Yovel year with exception to one year, and that's, of course, the Yovel year itself. In the Yovel year itself, land just simply cannot be sold, meaning the transaction is simply not recognized. It's a voided sale. And so it's a voided transaction. And that's true for you and I. Kohanim, however, can sell land in the Yovel year. What exactly happens to that land when it's sold in the Yovel year by a Kohen? So we're going to see later on in the Masechta. But in the meantime, that is one way in which they are exempted from the laws of Yovel. Two, go'alam la'olam, Rashi explains like this. When you and I are selling a land, so we have an ability to redeem it, meaning we could buy it back even though it's before Yovel. Obviously, what we're going to do is we're going to refund, meaning that whatever is left between now and the Yovel year, we'll prorate the number of years, we'll prorate it based on the original sale, and I'm going to get a refund. This is what's called ge'ula, buying back your land. Now, the idea of ge'ula, buying back your land, so that can be done, and specifically, by the way, we're talking about when you are being makdish the land and selling it to Hector, so you have an ability to buy it back, to redeem it back. However, 2 years that you are, the first 2 years after you are makdish it, you are banned from doing so. Okay, so there is a, there are 2 years in which the land is unredeemable. And again, we're going to be talking about this in more detail later in the Masechta. That's why I don't want to focus on it right now. But this this 2 year delay does not apply to Kohanim. It only applies to you and I. But to Kohanim, however, they're not subject to this two year delay. And Rashi says that's what's meant when the Gemara says go'alim la'olam, they could redeem it at any point in time. Meaning, if Kohanim were makdish the land, they could redeem it immediately. Fine. Just the point being is that Kohanim are not subject to all the laws of Yovel. But the Gemara's response is that's right, but they are subject to some of the laws of Yovel, and so therefore they're still connected to Shofar. Okay, so, in a nutshell, Kohanim are obligated in the mitzvah of Shofar and Rosh Hashanah. Okay. Hakol chayav mikra megillah. Everyone's obligated mikra megillah. We're continuing in the Gemara. We're in Dala Medala, four lines down. The Gemara says, Kohanim levim v'Yisrael. I'm sorry, the Mishnah says, Kohanim levim v'Yisrael are all obligated in the mitzvah of Megillah. And again, Pshita. It's the same question. Jewish people are obligated in the mitzvah of Megillah. Congratulations. Like, we would have known that. So, lo tzricha libatol avodasam. So the Gemara says, no, I'll tell you where it comes to play. It comes to play in the following. You know, by Kohanim, so they have the Avoda. And it's a daily event. Okay. So the Avoda, now let's say the Kohanim are saddled with the following choice to make. We can either do the Avoda now, or there's a minion reading Megillah. Now, I know there's a lot of pragmatic issues over here, meaning Megillah is, depending on who's laying the Megillah, right, let's say on average a 25-minute event. So meaning to say that, and the Avoda is also, you know, not the whole day, but there's avodah done in the morning, avodah done in the afternoon, meaning it never really seems to be that it's a binary choice of, hey, you're either going to be able to do avodah or you're going to be doing mikra megillah. Like, both can really be done. But in the abstract, however, we're just going to be discussing it from an abstract standpoint. Let's say it becomes a choice between avodah and megillah. Now, if I had to make the choice, which thankfully, I'm not the one choosing, but if I had to make the choice, I would say it's very simple. Mikra Megillah is a din derabbanan. Avoda is a din daraisa. I would say that the avoda would supersede that of the Megillah. And what we're learning right now is no, that's not the case. It doesn't matter if a Kohen right now is in the middle of doing the avoda or beginning to do the avoda. The Kohen is expected to drop doing the avoda, go and hear Mikra Megillah, and even if it means at the expense of doing the avoda. Okay, now that obviously represents a tremendous chiddush, meaning, again, like I said moments earlier, avoda is a din d'oraisa, Mikra Megillah is a din d'rabbanan. So what you have to say, the Gemara doesn't say this, but you're going to have to say something along the lines of that embedded in Mikra Megillah are certain values that are stronger, notably Pirsum Hanes. So Pirsum Hanes that's embedded within Mikra Megillah obviously has a more demanding value than that of the Avoda. Now, it's true, by the way, I explained the Gemara that when the Gemara says that it's either or, right, again, like I said moments earlier, like usually it's not going to be that black and white. It's not going to be that binary. But the Gemara says that in either or circumstance, so you're going to choose Mikra Megillah over that of the Avoda. The way I explain the Gemara is like the Rambam. The Rambam does say that the Gemara over here means even at the expense of. Not all Rishonim agree with that presentation of the Gemara. Some say that it's just a question of order, of Kedima. But the Gemara Kipshuto reads like the Rambam that we're talking about over here. I'm going to read the Megillah even at the expense of Mikra Megillah.
What about Tadish? You know Tadish for them?
Okay. I mean, there are plenty of rules. But over here, the value of Mikra Megillah is that is going to...
But I mean, like, why not... Like, since it's Tadish, after the Avoda, no?
I understand that. That Mikra Megillah has a stronger value. That's why it's called a Chiddush. Hakoch Chayavim V'Zimun Kohanim Levim V'Yisraelim. Everyone's obligated in making Zimun. And we discussed this just yesterday. Okay, so when you're benching with... When three men are eating together, so there's not only an obligation for them to bench, but benching with a zimun, adding an additional bracha at the beginning. Okay, so the Mishnah says that everyone's obligated in this kohanim levim v'Yisrael and pshita. So the Gemara says, now isn't this obvious? Meaning, of course, they're all Jewish, they all ate, they all have a mitzvah to bench. It's obvious. So the Gemara says, lo tzricha dekaachli kachim. So the Gemara says like this. Well. Could very well be that the Kohanim here are eating kachim. And the Gemara introduces us to what I consider to be a really interesting Havamina. So we know that when the Kohanim eat their karbanos, and certainly when we're talking about chatas and asham, but all karbanos for that matter, when they're eating karbanos that they're supposed to be eating, so not only are they performing a mitzvah, but that's part of the kapara aspect to it. Right? V'achlu osam asher kupar bahem. In fact, after Aaron loses his two sons, so Aaron was in a state of onen, and the brothers were in a state of aninus, and because of that, certain karbanos were not eaten, and Moshe gets very upset because certain karbanos were not eaten. The Kohanim eating the karbanos obviously is a mitzvah, and it provides also kapara as well. So the Havamina goes like this. In other words, when you and I are eating, what are we doing? It's called, we're enjoying ourselves. I mean, eating also is for self-preservation, right? But we're in a first world country, so we don't even think like that. So eating is obviously for the purpose of enjoyment. And the Torah says, good, you're satiated, you're full, now bench. When Kohanim are eating karbanos, so the Havamina is, that's not eating for enjoyment. That's eating because this is a mitzvah. They're on a mission right now. And they are doing so not because they are enjoying themselves, but because they have to. And maybe, again, in the Havamina, and maybe now they don't have to bench. It's a tremendous Havamina. So Amar Rechmana v'ha-kaparahi, kamash malam v'achalta v'savata, Amar Rechmana v'ha-isnehu. So the Gemara says, okay, so despite the Havamina, the maskana is, look, okay, even though they're told to eat, but when they get home, are they going to want to have dinner? No, they're full. So in other words, even though, yes, it's true, they're eating because they are commanded to eat, and the eating over there is really mission-driven, it's there to provide kapara for the owner of the karban, but nevertheless, they are going to get full at the same time. And so therefore, they're still going to be obligated to bench, and including a zimun. How come it starts from the zimun karanim living v'yisraelim? Okay, previously we talked about the chiv of zimun. Now we're talking about who can combine for the zimun. So pshita lo tzricha dekach likon truma o kadoshim. Vizar ka'achil chulin. The Gemara now introduces us to a really interesting idea, which has halachic ramifications. Let's say the following. Let's say our kohanim are going to be eating truma or kachim. And they're eating together with Yisraelim, who happen to be eating chulin. Now, obviously, by the way, because they can't eat truma and certain karbanos they're not allowed to eat. Let's assume we're talking about kasha kadoshim, which Yisraelim are not allowed to eat. So look at this table that we just created over here. Kohanim on one side of the table eating truma, and Yisraelim on the other side of the table that are eating chulin. So now, can they be mitzarev? Can they combine for a zimun? Now, Now, can the Yisrael reach over and take a little bit of the truma of the Kohen? The answer, of course, is no. So, aim alo, lead starry. So, therefore, the Havamina would be, well, they can't combine for Zimun because I can't eat what you're eating right now. And so, therefore, we can't combine for Zimun. That's the Havamina. What's the Chiddush? So the Gemara says the Chiddush goes like this. Well, it's true that the Yisrael can't eat what the Kohen is eating, but let's now flip it around. Can the Kohen eat what the Yisrael is eating? Sure. So even though when the question on the table is, can you pass that food over? So only one person is allowed to ask that question, the other one's not. Now, I know there are three people at the table over here, but you understand the point. If one side can ask to pass your food over so I could try it, even though he cannot reciprocate, that still is enough to create his starfus in order so that a zeman can be created. That's the chiddush of the Gemara. Now from here it comes out the following, that you can be mitzar for a zeman under the circumstances where, even though you can't eat my food, I can eat your food. So Tosfos over here discusses, let's say that people can't eat each other's food because they really don't like each other and they made a neder one against the other. Right? Disharmony in the family, or it doesn't have to be a family, any kind of group setting, and the people hate each other so much that they made a neder one against the other. So this is such a great scene over here. So we have three people at the table and they really dislike each other, each one of them bringing their own food to the table. So that the other people are not prepared to share. Not only not prepared to share, they made a neder that they're not going to be receiving benefit from the other. So under those circumstances, Tosfos says now you can't make zeman. Meaning, it's funny that they're even sitting at the same table together. Like I would imagine that they would be eating at different tables. But regardless, the point is that as long now that nobody can share with anybody, so under those circumstances, you cannot make zeman. Something which is slightly more practical, in other words, we are not making nadarm nowadays, but something more practical than that, however, which is not discussed by Tosfos, but it's discussed throughout. I saw it in the Aladaf, he discusses it, and that is, what if you're eating, what if one person is eating milchik at the table, and another person comes along and eats fleishik at the table? Now, there are other halachas which we learned back in Chulin, in terms of making some sort of heker, making sure that people know, I'm eating milchik, you're eating fleishik, we cannot share food. Okay, but from a standpoint of it's starfus zimun, can we combine for a zimun? I'm eating milchik, you're eating fleishik at the same table, and again, there's a third person also at the table, so that we can make zimun. So he quotes in the name of the Birchus HaZevach, it's written by the Chavetz Chaim. So he says, sure, meaning based on what we just learned together in the Gemara, the answer is yes. Because the person eating fleishik cannot eat the milchik, but the person eating milchik can eat fleishik. Now, you can't just eat them 1 hour. You can't eat them together, obviously. But in other words, but the halach is a strict letter of the law, is that if you're eating milchik, so what you do is you rinse out your mouth, you wash your hands, and you go ahead and you eat the fleishik. So the milchik person can eat the fleishik food, so they can be mitzaref for a zeman.
So this implies for zeman, like if three people sitting and they have their own sandwiches, they cannot have zeman?
Well, of course not. What?
Of course. If they're not sharing, I mean... Yeah.
You don't have to share. You have to at least have the ability to share. Correct. Okay. So, fine. So that's the Gemara regarding the Chiyuv of Zimun, and it's starfus by Zimun. Continuing now in the Gemara. Kol Marich and Kohanim Levim v'Yisraelim. So everyone can be Marich, and that's Kohanim Levim v'Yisraelim. And now we finally went full circle. We are now circling back to our Mishnah. Okay, took a couple of days, three to be exact, but we are now circling back to our Mishnah, and our Mishnah now, we're back on the topic of Erchin. Now again, let's remind each other. When we're talking about Erchin, what we're discussing is the following, is that I make a donation to the Beis HaMikdash through the instrument of Erchin. Now I can give anybody's Erch, I can give my own Erch, I can give somebody else's Erch, it does not matter. In other words, then what that assessment is going to be is based on two factors. It's going to be based on age and gender. And the menu for how much you are on the hook for is in the Torah in Perek of Zayin of Vayikra, which we said already on day one. Now, under these circumstances, when a person is ma'arich, that's the one who's making the pledge that he's going to be giving that much money to the Beis HaMikdash. The ne'arach is the person whose assessment is going to be based on. Now, the ma'arich and the ne'arach can be the same person, obviously. In other words, I can make the pledge that I'm going to give my erech. So I then serve as being the Marich and the Nerach. I can also say, look, instead of wanting to give mine, so I can give David's Erech. So I'll be the Marich and he'll be the Nerach. The Mishnah says, Hakol Ma'arichin, anybody can make a pledge. And then the Mishnah went on to saying, you know who's included in that list of everybody? Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim. And now, as we're used to, because this is now the, okay, I lost count. This is the, let's say, eighth or whatever. This is, we've been saying this a number of times. Pshita, it's obvious, meaning, of course, this is a mitzvah in the Torah, and therefore it's going to be incumbent upon anybody and everybody. And why would the Mishnah have to say Kohanim, Levim, v'Yisraelim? So the Gemara now is going to try to give a Havamina. And the Gemara is going to spend some time trying to give a Havamina. We are going to go through three different attempts with three different Amoraim in terms of who, in fact, is going to be saying over the Havamina. And even though the first one says Amarava, probably the better Girsa is going to be Rabba. And you'll see why. You could see the on the note in the Gemara. So it's Rabba. And you'll see why it's probably the better Girsa. So Amarava. So this is going to be the first attempt of three Havaminas of why I might have thought that a Kohen cannot be Marech. So let's start off like this. Amar Rabba lo nitzrucha ela ben bochri, did not. So the Gemara first entertains the following, Rabba entertains the following, we know the following. When every year, so I'm going to get a knock on the door sometime in the middle of the month of Adar, it's time for Machatzis HaShekel. And so, because annually, monies are collected from every Jewish male, so that the Beis HaMikdash has an operating fund. Fiscal year in the Beis HaMikdash starts on the first day of Nisan, and so funds are collected through the month of Adar in order to supply the Beis HaMikdash with its operating fund. Kohanim, when they get a knock on the door, do they have to give machitzis shekel? So the answer is debatable. Debatable. So the Gemara says, the opinion of Ben Bukhri is they do not have to give machitzis shekel. Now, they may if they would like to, but they don't have to. We learned in the Mishnah, Amar Rabbi Yehuda, Ahid Ben Bukhri, B'Yavne, Kol Kohen Sheshokol Ein Achote. So Ben Bukhri gave the following testimony in Yavne, and that is, if a Kohen decides to give Machzis HaShekel, he is not sinning. Meaning, Ben Bukhri's position is, he does not have to give the Machzis HaShekel, but he can. He has an option of doing so. And if he, in fact, chooses to do so, it's not a bad thing, but he doesn't have to give. So Amar Lo Rav Yochanan Zakeh Lo Kein. Rav Yochanan Zakeh says, no, you're wrong. Meaning, the Kohen's obligation to give Machzis HaShekel is just like everybody else. El Kohen Sheino Shokel Chote. I'll go the other direction. If the Kohen doesn't give Machzis HaShekel, he's a sinner. So El Shekohanim Darshim Mikra Zelatzman. But rather, what the Kohanim doing is that they rationalize why it is that they don't have to give Machzis HaShekel. But it's a rationalization. It's not accurate. It's not correct. Now the pasuk says Chol Minchas Kohen Kalal Tiyelo Sochel. Now we're going over the rationalization of the Kohanim, according to Rav Yochanan and Mezakai. Why does they feel that they don't have to give Machzis HaShekel? Now we know the following: if a non Kohen were to be offering a mincha to the Beis Hamikdash, so what happens to the mincha? The kometz goes up onto the mizbech, burnt on the mizbech. The shirayim, the remaining portion of the mincha, is eaten by the Kohanim. Okay. What if a Kohen offers a mincha for whatever reason? So then there are shirayim taken off. It's burned on the mizbech. The kometz is taken off and burned on the mizbech. What about the shirayim? That too is also burnt on the mizbech. In fact, we just read the pasuk. Chol minchas kohen kalil tiyeh lo sochel. There is a lav in the Torah for any Kohen to be eating a mincha. The shirayim as well. Any portion of a mincha of a Kohen. So if a Kohen offers a mincha, so it is to be totally burnt on the Mizbeach, not to be eaten by a Kohen. So now the Kohen's thinking to himself as follows. Hey, let me think about this. If I now donate to the Machatzis HaShekel, so that means all communal funds are going to be funded by not only Yisraelim, but me as well. Now I know that over the course of the year, because of various Yamim Tovim, so there is going to be public karbanos that are going to be brought as minchas, right? The Minchas HaOmer, second day of Pesach, Shtei Alechem, An Shavuos. So there are going to be minchas that are going to be purchased from public money. Now, if part of that public money is my money, so then what does that mean? It means now it's the mincha of a Kohen. And so therefore, I'm going to be violating a lav if I'm the one funding that mincha. That's their thought process. So, ho over omer v'shtei alechem v'lechem apanim shalanu heim. Oh, and I left out the lechem apanim, which is weekly. So, heich heim ne'echalim. So, how would we be able to eat it if we, in fact, funded it? So, what does that mean? We shouldn't be funding it. Okay. So that's a rationalization. Now, in terms of how you would counter that rationalization, so stay tuned. I'm going to go over that point in just a moment. But in the meantime, that is the Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says that, but it's just that, it's just a rationalization. It's not correct. And so therefore he feels that a Kohen is obligated to give the machatzis a shekel. Now let's go back to Ben Bukhri. Ben Bukhri says they're not. Ula Ben Bukhri nami kevin delechatzil mechayv elasuye ki maisi nami chotehu dekama ayochun lazara. So the Gemara says, now according to Ben Bukhri, I just want to understand the following. So they're not obligated to give. And they give. But wait one second, they're not obligated. So doesn't that represent chulin ba'azara? Meaning, so it does not have kedusha. So the Gemara says, the maisi lu masal tzibur. So the Gemara says, okay, but that's not such a problem. Meaning when they give it to the Gizbar for collection, they're saying that this is going to be no longer ours. This is going to be going to the public. In other words, they'll be makdish the coin as they're giving it. But it's only optional. They're not obligated. Okay. Now, with all that stated, now, if you go to the Parsha of Erchin, so you will see over there the Torah writes Chol Erkecha Yeh B'Shekel HaKodesh. So you see that the Torah puts together in the same pasuk the idea of Erchin and the idea of Shekel. So now, Kol Di'isa B'Shekelim Isa B'Erchin V'Hani Kohanim Hov V'Lesnu B'Shekelim V'Lesnu B'Erchin. And so now that these ideas correlate with one another, so then the Havamina would be that if you are included in Machatzis HaShekel, you're included in Erchin. And if you're not included in Machatzis HaShekel, which according to Ben Bukhri, Kohanim are not included, so the Havamina would be that they're also not included in Erchin as well. So Kamash Malan. So that's the Chiddush. That's why the Mishnah has to go out of its way to say that Kohanim are included in Erchin, because I could have constructed that argument, albeit it only works for Ben Bukhri. I could have constructed the argument and say that Kohanim are not included in the Parsha of Erchin. Now the Gemara says, Amar le Abaye, hai v'chol erkecha l'chol erchen shata marich lo yepchusim miselahu da'asa. Now the Gemara says, now wait one second, we already have that pasuk darshan 4. Meaning you wanted to use that pasuk to create some sort of correlation between erchen and shkalim? No. The pasuk is there to teach us a different halacha, and that's the halacha of hesek yad. Hesek yad, which we're going to be seeing a lot over the course of this masechta, meaning this is the masechta to talk about hesek yad, and that's the following. Let's say after a person made an erchin pledge, he discovers that he does not have the funds in order to make good on his pledge. I'm sure that's never happened before. For erchin, what you have is an ability of a special assessment, hesek yad, which means to say that under those circumstances, he's going to go in front of a panel of kohanim, and they're going to assess what he could give. And the base minimum amount of what he's going to be given under this special assessment is going to be 1 shekel. We learn it from that pasuk. Okay, a special halach of hesek yad. So the Gemara is saying, so you can't use this pasuk to teach me about any connection between shkalim and erchin. The pasuk is already used and dedicated to teach me a different halacha. Okay. Just one thing before we go on. The halachas like Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai. Kohanim, in fact, are obligated to give the machatzis a shekel. Question. What are we going to do about the Ben Bukhri argument? Or the argument that was even given by Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai? Meaning, the rationalization of the Kohanim is, well, if I give the money, so that means that I'm funding the money, and I'm funding menachos, and I'm going to be eating, but that means that that's a mincha now that's given by a Kohen. And a Kohen's not allowed to eat a mincha that's given by a Kohen. So what do we do with that argument?
He's funding other korbanos too. It's not just mincha.
Oh, okay, fine. So Rashi over here writes, Rashi divrei maskil shelanuhu, sha'arei mitshumas halishka hinvayim ve'im anu shoklim halishka nimsa minchas omer she'alechem v'lechem apanim mishalanim ve'ech ne'achalem haksiv lo sochal uli didan. Okay, really wanted to start there. Uli didan leislan hadrasha da'hai kalil tiyeh b'minchas kohen gredas aksiv. So the first point Rashi makes is the following, and it's a really simple point. We're going to make a distinction between a private carbon and a public carbon. In other words, when a Kohen's giving his own private carbon, so you're right, the Pasuk says that if the Kohen is giving his own mincha, so that mincha given privately by a Kohen is no longer going to be able to be eaten by a Kohen. So love for a Kohen to eat such a carbon. However, once the Kohen is contributing money to the public, so those are public carbonos, and the Isser there does not apply. It's simple. A difference between a private carbon versus a public carbon. Carbon yachid versus a carbon tzibur. Rashi makes another point, which I find to be interesting. Ava b'mincha sibor zil basaruba. And also, when it comes to the public karban, so how much money is the kohen contributing? Percentage-wise, a small percentage. And Rashi over here employs the idea of bitul barov. It's going to be nullified amongst the majority. So in other words, this next point of Rashi, really interesting, because if I didn't have the second part of Rashi, I just could have simply said there is a fundamental difference between a public karban and a private karban, which Rashi actually does say. But then Rashi also adds the idea of bitul barov, it's interesting, by money, by finances. This idea of bitul barov, you know, it's the Kohen's money, but it only represents a small portion, it's mevatel. It's negated amongst the vast majority of shkalim that are contributed by the Israelim. Okay. And this idea that Rashi is employing, does it work elsewhere in terms of money? Meaning we're talking about bitul by money. In other words, bitul works by Seva Heter. Bitul, as we learned actually recently, works by Tumah Tahara. Bitul also works by money as well, right? Okay, that's what Rashi seems to be saying. Anyway, let's go back to our Gemara. Okay, we're looking now to construct a Havamina. The Mishnah says that a Kohen can be Ma'arich, and why would I have thought otherwise? Why would I have thought a Kohen cannot be Ma'arich? So the Gemara tried to give us one Havamina given by Rabbo. It has to do with the fact that there's some sort of connection between Erchin and Shkalim. Kohen is not included in Shekel. He's not included in Erchin as well. Okay, Abai dismissed it, and so therefore Abai is going to give now our second attempt at Havamina. Elamar Abai Yitzurich Sakadar Chamina Hovik Sivu Petuyev Miben Chorosh Tifteh Be'erkecha. So, if you look in Parshas Korach, you will find the Torah describing the mitzvah of Pidyon HaBen, also using the word Erchin. Now, so he understands that there is a connection between Erchin and Pidyon HaBen. Called Isa B'Pidyon HaBen, Isa B'Erchin. Ma'ani Kohanim Hova Lesnu B'Pidyon HaBen, Lesnu B'Erchin. Now, Kohanim are not included in Pidyon HaBen, as we learned back in Bechoros. And so, therefore, if they're not included in Pidyon HaBen, they're also not included in Erchin as well. So, Kamash Malan. And so, that's the Havamina. And the Chiddush is that they are, it's true, they're not included in Pidyon HaBen, but they are included in Erchin. So, Amalei Rava, Ela Miata, Gabe El Asham Dechziv. So, the Gemara says, so Rava says to Abaye, so wait one second. You mean to tell me that anytime you find the word Erchin in the Torah, so therefore we create an automatic connection? Rava says, it's just not true. I'll give you an example. Ves Hashemo Yavil Hashem El Ayol Tamim Min Hatzon Be'erkecha. So, we know there's a Karban Asham. At the end of Parshas V'Yikra, so there are specific averos where if done b'shogeg, so you bring a carbon asham. Carbon asham very much like a carbon chatas, as we saw in the beginning of Masechta Zvachim. But anyway, you bring a carbon asham. Now in the pasuk, the Torah, when introducing us to the carbon asham, uses the word zerchin. Now is that it? Now are we, because the Torah over there said the word erchin, you're going to link together now the idea of asham and erchin? And now they're connected, and you want to tell me now, well, if you're not included in Erchin, you're not included in the Asham, in the ability to bring a carbon Asham. So the Gemara says, so I'll give you what the Gemara feels is a ridiculous example. So you mean to tell me, Tumtum and Adjogonus, which we know is excluded from Erchin, because they're not definitively neither male nor female, so you mean to tell me that they're excluded from an El Asham? I mean, they don't bring a carbon Asham? Meaning that the Gemara is basically saying that's preposterous. Because you have somebody who sinned by accident and wants to bring a carbon asham. And you want to tell me because of this connection they can't bring an asham. No, of course they can bring an asham. It's true they're excluded from Erchin. But that doesn't mean they can't bring a carbon if they sin. It's ridiculous. So Rava says, so that can't be. Just because you see the word Erchin in a parsha doesn't mean that we're automatically connecting the subject matter of the pasuk and Erchin. So Ela Marava Vitemer Ravashi Yitzrich. So the Gemara says, okay, so no more connections. We're not connecting it to Shkalim. We're not connecting it to Ashamos. No more connections. But Rava says it works like this. So or some say Ravashi say it. Sakata Chamina Hovikzi Vehemido Lifnei Kohen. Now in our special assessment that we spoke about just moments earlier. So what happens? He's brought in front of a panel of Kohanim. Well, actually, the pasuk says Kohen. We'll talk about the Hesed process later in the Masechta. So it sounds like it's as follows, is that if a person is going to be subject to a special assessment, he's going to go to the Kohen. Who's going in front of the Kohen? So the simple reading of the pasuk is the non-Kohen is going to go in front of a Kohen. And a simple reading of the pasuk would be, below Kohen lifnei Kohen. But a Kohen does not go in front of a Kohen. Why wouldn't a Kohen go in front of a Kohen? Because a Kohen is excluded from Erchin. That's the Havamina. And the Kamash Malan, and the Chiddush is that you could read the pasuk that way, but that's not a valid reading of the pasuk. But rather, a kohen also is included in those who could be marich. So that was a long sentence, but basically, if I can now just shorten that whole sentence, why would the Mishnah have to tell us that Kohanim and Yisraelim, I'm sorry, Kohanim, Levim, and Yisraelim are included in the parsha of being ma'arich, meaning why would I have thought differently? So after entertaining two havaminas, the Gemara settles on the third havamina, which would be, because I would think that they read the pasuk to say that a Kohen is not subject to Erechin because only a non-Kohen is assessed in front of a Kohen. That's the havamina. The maskana is no, that a Kohen too can be ma'arich. And if necessary, can also be assessed as well. Now, we are back to our Mishnah. And back to our Mishnah now, we are leaving the tour of Shas, of Hakols, where all the Hakols, Kohanim, Levim, V'Yisraelim, why is that mentioned in so many different places? So after now, 2.5 lot of Gemara, we go back to our Mishnah, and we're going to now be discussing. Now, in terms of Ne'erach, who can become the object of Erechin? Who can be the subject of Erechin? So that could be even a Menuva Mukashchen. Now, Menuva Mukashchen, somebody so physically deformed that they don't have a market value, and nevertheless, they have an Erech. Because again, for Erechin, there are only two factors, age and gender. And they have an age and they have a gender. So therefore, they're included in Erechin. Now, how do I know that this is so Menahanimila Tanur Rabbanan? So the Gemara now is going to treat us to a really long Braisa. Now, the Braisa is going to be making numerous halachic points, one after another. After we finish with the Braisa, the Gemara then is going to go back to the Braisa and examine each section of the Braisa step by step. So I'm going to first read the Braisa quickly, articulate all the points of the Braisa, and then we'll look for better understanding after we finish the Braisa. Number one, Tanur Rabbanan, we learned Tanur Braisa, Erka Chalavi, Erech Sasam. So the first point of the Braisa is Erech Sasam. If I make an Erech, but I do not identify whose Erech I'm going to give, so there is an Erech obligation. The obvious question, how much? Stay tuned. Davar Acher, another point. Be'erkecha, Erech Kulo Onosim Velo Erech Eivarim. You give the Erech of an entire person. There is no Erech of limbs. So what does that mean? Again, stay tuned. We're going to discuss that better. Yachosh Ani Mosei Av Davar Shanasham Tuluyabo Tamalam Nefashos. What if I want to give the Erech of somebody's limb, extremity, or organ that's so vital that they cannot live without it, right? You can live without your fingers, although I like all of them. I'd prefer to keep them. But you cannot live without a head. And so if I dedicate a person's head as Erechin, so then the Pasuk says the word Nefashos, his Nefesh is connected to that. Without his head, he's no longer alive. And so therefore the Erechin obligation is on. Nefashos v'lo ames. It has to be somebody living, not dead. Otsias ames v'lo otsias agoses. How about somebody who's a goses? Someone who's in the throes of death. Tamalam v'amid v'arich. Kol sheyeshna ba'arada yeshna, I'm sorry. Kol sheyeshna ba'amada yeshna ba'aracha v'kol sheyeshna ba'amada yeshna ba'aracha. Anybody who's subject to being to be able to stand up, so that person is subject to Erechin. If a person cannot stand up on his own, like a goses, so then he's not subject to Erechin.
Who's in a wheelchair?
Don't know, but the Gemara is going to ask the obvious question, wouldn't that include also a dead person? Meaning a dead person is going to have difficulty standing up. So, okay, the Gemara is going to ask
what's
that question.
Age? The dead person's age.
Right, okay, another good point. But okay, the Gemara is going to come back to that. Davar Acher, Nefashos, Ainli Ela, Echash Erich Echad, Echash Erich Mea Minayin, Tamalam, Nefashos. Can I do Erechin of multiple people simultaneously? The answer is yes. The pasuk says nefashos. Dava acher. Nefashos, ein li'ela ish, sheherich bein ish bein isha. So far I know that if a man is ma'arich, whether the subject is going to be a man or a woman, it's valid. Isha sheherichah ish. Isha sheherichah isha minayin. How do I know that if a woman makes an Erechin pledge, she is going to be obligated? Tamar lamar nefashos. The pasuk says nefashos. Now, again, just foreshadowing some of the upcoming Gemaras, like you're noticing that we're making multiple points from the same word. The Gemara is going to be asking that question. Davar Acher, Nefashos, Rabbos, Menuvah, Mukashkin. Another point to consider is that the word Nefashos also tells us that as long as you have a Nefesh, you're subject to Erechin. So even though you're Menuvah, Mukashkin, which even though you have no market value, but you have Nefesh, and therefore you're subject to Erechin. And here the Braisa telegraphs the Havamina. I might have thought that Damim and Erchin are connected. And if you're not including Damim, if you don't have a market value, you also don't have an Erchin as well. Tamalam and Nefashos. The Nefashos is coming to tell us no such connection. Even though you don't have a market value, you do have an Erchin value. Vaya Erkachal Rabba Tumtum Vajoganos. L'damim. Vaya Erkach is teaching me that Tumtum and Jogonos, even though they don't have an Erchin, but they do have Damim. And again, the same Havamina, but now in the other direction. If you don't have an Erech value, you also don't have a Damim value. So, Tumtum and Androgynous, who don't have an Erech value because they're not definitively male nor female, so therefore they don't have a Damim value. Tamalamar Vaya Erkacha. So the Vahaya Erkacha is coming to tell me that Tumtum and Androgynous, despite the fact of not being included in Erechin, are in fact included in Damim. Hazachar, Zachar v'lo Tumtum v'Androgynous. So Hazachar tells me that a male and not Tumtum v'Androgynous, whose gender is either unknown or confused, meaning has both, biologically. Yachol yehe be'erech isha v'yeh be'erech isha. I might have thought that they're not within the erech of an ish, but they are including the erech of isha. So Tumtum v'Androgynous are not male, but maybe you'll assess them based on a female. Tamalomer v'yeh erkecha hazachar v'im nekevahi. Zachar vadai Zachar vadai nekeva vadais velo tumtum vajoganos. So the Brisa concludes that in order to be subject to erech, you have to be either definitively male or definitively female. But if you are tumtum, which is unknown, there's a membrane covering the genitalia, or there's an androgynous where both genitalia are present. So under those circumstances, you are not subject to the erech to an erech value. Okay, Adkan. I'm going to take a moment to pause. That was a long Brisa. I'm going to breathe. Okay. And now we're going to go through the Gemara, where the Gemara is going to pick apart every point of the Braisa for better understanding. Amar Mar. So, Be'erka Chalarabas Erech Sasam. So, and we're going to go in order of the Braisa. We're going to start with the first point of the Braisa, and that is Erech Sasam. If, let's say, I make an Erech pledge, but I fail to identify whose Erech we're talking about, I just simply say, hey, I want to be on the hook for an Erech. Right, an Erech donation. Now, he forgot, right? He didn't know the Minog. Minog, Halacha. And that is, you got to, you know, who's Erech? He doesn't say. So, my Erech Sassum to Tanya, how my Erech Sassum alai, no saying ke Pachu Sheberechen. Vekama Pachu Sheberechen Shol Sheshkalam. So, if you obligate yourself to give Erech Sassum, Sassum just simply means anonymous. He didn't identify anybody. So you are on the hook, and what are you on the hook for? The minimum amount, which is 3 shkalim. Now, in terms of minimum amount, so this could be debatable. In fact, not only can it be debatable, it is debatable. The Gemara is going to debate it right now. What is the minimum amount? So if you look at your schedule in the Torah, right, open up to the 27th parak, so you will find that the smallest amount that one could give is 3 shkalim. Now, that's going to be for a female ranging in age from 1 month to 5 years. Okay. So that's 3 shkalim. So that's the minimum. So because you didn't identify anybody, so you're going to be giving the base minimum of 3. Now, ve'im ha-chamishim, the Gemara says, well, wait 1 second. Why 3? Why not 50? 50 is the maximum a person can give. So tafasa meru below tafasa, tafasa meru tafasa. So the Gemara gives us the tried and true rule of don't bite off more than you can chew. Okay. I'm not sure if my... you know, modernization of the Gemara works, but the basic idea is that when we are going to be looking at any given number, you take the most conservative approach you possibly can. In other words, if the Torah is giving you a choice of, if there are options of which number to choose, if you're conservative, you'll be right, most probably. Meaning, we don't know, so which one is it going to be? Well, if I say 3, so everything includes 3. Right, the numbers 5, 10, 15, 30, right? All the various options in the Torah of the numbers that can be chosen. 3 is included in all of them. If I chose 50, I may have chosen wrong. So tafasta meruba lo tafasta. The more you take, the more likely it is you didn't choose correctly. But if you choose a number that's small, the smallest number to choose, so then chances are you got it. Right? Anytime we go from 2 and above, so we're always going to choose the number 2 because... from a conservative standpoint, we definitely got that right, as opposed to once we choose anything above that, so we don't know. Anyway, tafas mer below tafas. The aim of shekel. The Gemara says, but you know what? The minimum of 3 being the minimum, that's debatable. Why? Because of what we learned earlier this morning. Hesed Yad. because of the special assessment. If a person makes a pledge and is unable to fulfill his pledge, so he's going to be subject to a special assessment. And it can go down as low as one shekel. So maybe this person who gives an anonymous erech, so maybe instead of giving three shekelim, he can give one shekel. So dichsiv, v'chol erkecha yeh b'shekel ha-kodesh. So ha'u besegahu dichsiv. So the Gemara says, okay, but you know what? It's not an option. Because that's special assessment. That's hesed yad. Meaning this person over here is not in the parsha of special assessment. He's in the parsha of he's giving an erech pledge. It just happens to be. He didn't identify who the nerech is going to be. So we'll choose somebody. And again, because we're going to be conservative, we'll choose the smallest amount, which is three. But we're not going to give him the one shekel assessment because that's special assessment and he doesn't belong there. Valakra lamali. So the Gemara says, if that's true, so then what's the pasuk there coming to teach me? Meaning, okay, great. We are now at the conclusion. I needed a pasuk to teach me this, meaning we have the principle of tafasta merubah lo tafasta. We would have figured this out on our own without the pasuk. So Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Abarvu, Alam Rashayinu Nid, Don Behesig Yad. So the Gemara says, okay, you know what the pasuk's telling me? Pasuk's telling me that if a person makes an erech and unidentified, he doesn't say who the subject of the erech is going to be. So the pasuk is there to tell me that he has to give the smallest amount, but the smallest specified amount. Meaning he's not entitled to give Hesig Yad. Because Hesig Yad is a different category. That's special assessment. My time at Kimifarish Dami. And the Gemara goes on to explain because this falls under the category of Mifarish. Meaning it's as if he specified, even though he didn't. And so therefore he has to give a specified amount. The smallest specified amount, but three shkalim. Okay, that is all one version of the Gemara. Yikadamar, the Gemara has another version of the Gemara, which is Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Rav Barvu, and Nidon Behesig Yad. So the Gemara says that in the second version, he's actually, this person who's making an erech donation but unspecified, he actually can give one shekel. Now, we just spent the last 5 minutes of Gemara pointing out that it's not the same. Meaning categorically, that's Hesig Yad, that's special assessment. And he made an erech neder. So over here, it's a little bit difficult to understand like how the Gemara just turned. Meaning the Gemara was just arguing that this is not a position to take. And now the Gemara is saying, no, it is a position to take. And not only that, but to make the Gemara even that much more exciting, then the Gemara follows it up with a pshita. The Gemara says, well, that's obvious. Well, just 5 lines ago in the Gemara, it was not obvious. In fact, the Gemara rejected this argument. So it's interesting how the Gemara goes on this particular issue, really, from one end to the other end, where the Gemara rejects the argument, and now the Gemara is arguing on the other side, no, it's obvious, that if the person makes an unspecified erech, so he's going to be giving one shekel, obviously. So ma'u detema k'mefarish dami k'mash malan. And the hava, I mean, it would have been, no, it has to be a specified amount, meaning minimum being three, and the chiddush is, no, he doesn't have to give that much, he can get away with giving one shekel. Okay, so admittedly, the Gemara really ping-pongs between what is considered the minimum amount the person gives when he does not identify who the erech value is. Is it either going to be three shekelim or one shekel? And the Gemara vacillates on that point. Davar acher, next part of the Braisa. Be'erkecha erech kulohu nosim ve'eino nosim erech demei evarim. You do not give, if you want to give a person's, the person, not a person's erech, but his fingers erech, right? I really like your hands. I want to give the erech of your hands, so there's no erech of evarim. Dumb. Now, there's going to be damim, but there's no erech. So, v'ha afikdal erech stam. Now, the Gemara says, now, didn't you just double dip? You used the pasuk 2 times over. We just used it moments earlier to teach me the halacha of erech sasam. And now I'm going to be using the same phrase to be teaching me a second halacha. So the karibay erech be'erkecha. So the Gemara says that the double drasha is based on the fact that the Torah could have said the word erech, instead uses the word erkecha to teach me both points. Yachol, back to the brayso. Yachol shani mosi davar shen hashem atulu yabo tamalam nifashos. Let's say I give the erech of a body part where you can't live without it, like your head. So there, you are on the hook. Because the Torah says, nefashos. Nefashos velo es hames. Next part of the Braisa. You have to give the erech of somebody who's living, not somebody who's dead. Va'afikte. Now the Gemara says, wait 1 second. We just used the nefashos to teach me the previous point. So karibay nefesh nefashos. So the Gemara right now is arguing, well, the Torah could have said nefesh and instead nefashos. 2 drashos. Otsias hames velo otsias agoses. Tamalamar ve'amid ve'erech. Now, what about a gosei? So the Braisa on that says, no. Gosei, somebody's in the throes of death because he can't stand up, so therefore he's not subject to erechin. So v'yachi meis nami, typically me ve'ha'emid ve'ha'erich, a dead person cannot stand up. So why is, in other words, we all know there's no erech of a dead person, but maybe it's based on the simple fact that there's no hamada, there's no aracha. So achinami, v'ala nefesh nefashos la'malika, debin la'meimer kaman. Okay, so then it opens up, it frees up a nefesh nefashos drasha. Gemara says, stay tuned, because we're going to darshan that. Davar achin nefashos, ein li ela echesh erich echad. Echesh erich mea minayin. How about if a person makes an erichin of many people simultaneously? How do we know that he's on the hook for an erich donation for every person? Tamalam nefashos, in the plural. Davar achin nefashos, ein li ela ish erich bein ish bein isha. A man being marich, either a man or a woman. Isha she'ericha ish, v'isha she'ericha isha minayin. How about a woman being marich, either a man or a woman, tamalam nefashos. So nefashos tells me that works as well. Davar acher nefashos lahavi menuva mukashken. And nefashos also tells me that as long as you have a nefesh, you're subject to erchin, which means that even a menuva mukashken who have no market value are going to have an erich. How many drushas did we just learn from the word nefashos? So I've been keeping score. 4. So we have been learning now 4 drushas from the word nefashos. So the Gemara says, okay. And that's 3 too many. Meaning you can learn out 1 halacha from the word nefashos, but 4 different halacha from nefashos, how does that work? So the Gemara says, Hanach lo tzricha kra maitami ki shakol hu v'yavo kulam. Gemara makes the following point. Look, as far as the 3 drushas are concerned, the 3 drushas of davar shanashama tuluya bo, a limb that is life dependent like your head. A second drasha of one person being marich multiple people at the same time. A third drasha of a man being marich either a man or a woman. A woman being marich either a man or a woman. They all work based on the word nefashos. The Gemara's argument right now is that any one of these drashas are not more compelling than any of the other drashas. Okay. I admittedly am I struggle a little bit in terms of understanding how the Gemara basically makes it a push in terms of strength of drasha or how compelling the drasha is. But the Gemara over here calls it a push. All 3 of these points are basically equal in value. And so therefore, there's not one drasha that's going to push out the other drasha. And so therefore, all 3 of them come out from the pasuk of nefesh. Ki itzrich kra. And so now with that stated, so then what are we going to do with the extra word nefashos? So lemenuva mukashken. So really, the new drasha, so to say, is the drasha of Nuva Mukushkin, who the itzterich. Okay. And that's what comes out now from the nefesh nefashos. The 3 halachas that we just learned, plus somebody does not have a market value, he also is going to have an erich value because of this drasha as well. Okay, let's quickly recap. Today, we went and finished up the Mishnayos and Braisos throughout Shas to describe Kohanim, Levim, Yisraelim are obligated in mitzvos. We did it by Shofar, Megillah, Zimun, and Erchin. And then, from this point going forward, we started back to our Mishnah, we circled around to our Mishnah, and we started with analysis of the Mishnah. Question, how do I know that a Menuval and a Mukashchin, who do not have a market value, have an Erch value? So we learned it based on Drushas. And while we did that Drusha, so we started on the bottom of Dalamad Aleph, a lengthy Brisa that gives us numerous halachas that we learned out from the Pesukim, and the Gemara quoted the entire Brisa, and we are right now in the middle, going over every point of the Brisa, analyzing and understanding how the drushas work for every point within the Brisa.